106 days into U.S.-Israeli genocide in Gaza, a new report reveals at least two mothers are killed every hour in the besieged Gaza Strip. The U.N. says thousands of Palestinians are detained by Israeli forces in Gaza and they face humiliation and torture. Israeli occupation forces launched fresh raids on several areas of the occupied West Bank, abducting several Palestinians there. Now we have breaking news coming in. Moments ago, there was an explosion in the Syrian capital, Damascus, resulting in what we believe at least five fatalities at a residential building there in the Syrian capital carried out by the Israeli regime. And we believe we have our Damascus correspondent that's trying to get to the scene to try to get us updated with respect to what is going on. This is a quickly developing story. Five people have been confirmed killed so far, several injured in an attack reportedly carried out by the Israeli regime. Joining us is Ibrahim Wahdi. Hello, Ibrahim. What can you tell us?
Good afternoon. Today, around 10 a.m., we heard loud explosions in Al-Mazzeh area, which is a residential area in Damascus. It was due to an Israeli aggression that targeted a building. A three-story building collapsed over its residents due to the attack. Initial information indicated that there were five martyrs retrieved from under the rubble. Rescue and rescue teams and civil defense teams are still searching for survivors at the moment. It's a bit hard because it's a narrow street. The building is, as I said, completely civilian. It's in this same street of the South Africa Embassy in Mazzeh, Western Mazzeh. So far, there's no information about any important figures that were targeted. The Islamic Jihad representative, Sayyid Ismail Sandawi, denied any of their cadres were attacked or on any of their offices. We are still far away from the scene because the security teams locked the scene completely. We are not allowed to go there because it might not be safe. They're afraid that some other buildings might collapse due to the explosion. This is a blatant violation of human norms and international laws. This is a complete residential area. There's no military base, no military presence in any of any form. The martyrs are all civilians. The damage, the footage of the damage, it's severe damage. This marks the first attack after the Meron control airbase was destroyed by the resistance, the Lebanese resistance. These attacks have been escalated since October the 7th. Since October the 7th, I think we now have over 25 Israeli aggressions targeted Damascus International Airport, Aleppo International Airport. The latest attack on Aleppo caused also three civilian martyrs and other wounded, only civilians. Israel, yes, it's targeting sometimes military bases, but most of the time it's targeting civilians, or at least they don't care about civilian lives. They're putting them at risk all the time. This is, I think, we are still in within the third phase of the Israeli aggression, where the assassinations, terrorist attacks here and there will continue, and some observers think that we are going through more escalation.
And at this point, you mentioned you cannot get near the blast site. Is that correct? But you're fairly positive that the explosion has resulted in the entire collapse of that building, Abraham.
Exactly.
You mentioned is a completely civilian area.
I'll try to get a bit closer. But I don't think it's kind of possible.
I'm sorry.
We have been told to cut off. I'm sorry.
Oh, it's okay, Ibrahim. Thank you for that update, Ibrahim Wahdi. Apparently, he's near a blast site where we believe the Israeli regime, according to our reporter there in Damascus, he said an explosion at a three-story building in Damascus carried out by the Israeli regime has resulted in at least 5 fatalities. He mentioned they cannot get near the blast site, but believes the building has completely collapsed as a result of this attack, saying it is in a heavily civilian populated area, and he believes those deceased are civilians. And at this point, we do not know exactly who is in that building and exactly how many injuries next to these 5 fatalities have resulted. This is a quickly developing story. He said there is, I believe, a South African embassy close by that he just mentioned. Ironically, South Africa has brought a case against the Israeli regime at the International Court of Justice for a genocide in Gaza. And we don't feel at this point we have any very little information who was in that building, what the purpose of this attack has been. But our reporter said the Israeli regime has stepped up escalations in attacks on Syrian soil. We know the regime has frequently carried out attacks against resistance forces in Syria, and the Damascus government has time and again appealed to the United Nations to put an end to these violations of its sovereignty. These attacks by the Israeli regime against targets in Syria, often 106 days into Israeli war on the Gaza Strip, and the regime continues with its carpet bombing campaign across the besieged Palestinian territory. Overall death toll from regime's war has passed 24,800, and more than 62,000 people have been wounded, and thousands are still missing and presumed buried under rubble. Israel continues pounding residential buildings and refugee camps in areas it had said would be safe. Hospitals are also overwhelmed throughout the besieged enclave, with people literally waiting on floors for medical treatment. Deadly raids are being conducted while coastal territories under a near total communications blackout imposed by the regime in Tel Aviv. As the U.S. managed Israeli genocide in Gaza continues, new UN figures indicate women are among the main victims of the regime's deadly onslaught on Gaza. According to UN Entity for Gender Equality and Empowerment of Women, also known as UN Women, out of nearly 25,000 people killed in Gaza, some 70% make up women and children. UN Women says that 2 mothers are killed every single hour by the Israeli regime's bombing and shelling campaign. Agency says of nearly 2 million internally displaced people in Gaza, half of them are women and girls. UN Women are also estimate that at least 3,000 women who may have become widows or heads of households are in urgent need of protection and food assistance. Figures by the agency come as nothing has been done to address the crisis concerning women in Gaza. According to the figures, only 0.90% of UN funding that has been directed to national or local women's organizations. Meanwhile, the United Nations says Israel's detained thousands of Palestinians in Gaza since early October, when the regime launched its deadly onslaught on the besieged enclave.
During my time here, I managed to meet a number of released detainees. These are men who were detained by the Israeli security forces in unknown locations for between 30 to 55 days. They described being beaten, humiliated, subjected to ill treatment, and to what may amount to torture. They reported being blindfolded for long periods, some of them for several consecutive days.
I don't see any, so let's go to the platform.
Sungay said Palestinians are detained in horrific conditions. He said he personally heard accounts of released detainees who said they were beaten and humiliated. Commissioner also urged the release of those held without charge and called for a transparent probe into all instances of torture by the Israeli regime. Multiple released Palestinian detainees said they were transferred in trucks to open-air prisons where they suffered treatment, different forms of maltreatment.
They took me to the truck, and the truck was crowded with detainees. They practiced the worst types of torture on us. It was a rainy night, so they took us to a northern area and put us on the asphalt. It was raining hard and it was cold. We stayed in the rain for more than an hour, and they beat us while we were tied up.
Freed prisoners also said they were threatened to be shot and forced to insult Palestinian groups and political figures. Such accounts are backed by footage released by Israeli troops on social media, which shows mistreatment of prisoners Videos often show blindfolded Palestinians among the many women and children. South African politician and youth activist Mohammed Khalid Sayed spoke to us earlier about Israeli genocide in Gaza. He tried to explain why he thinks the regime is imposing an all-out communications blackout.
This is a genocide. The pictures are here. The death toll speaks to it. But even within that context, the people of Gaza and the resistance and Hamas in particular have put up a brave fight and they continue to resist. And we want to commend them for that. Without Iran, this particular axis, giving support to the suffering people of Gaza and the resistance in Gaza, will not be possible. The aim of the Israeli regime in carrying out this particular blackout is so that they can suppress the information coming out of Gaza, so that their crimes, their atrocities, their genocide cannot be sent out to the rest of the world. But still, the information is at our disposal. So that's their objective. But also, you know, crazy regimes like the Israeli regime, especially the one led by Benjamin Netanyahu, does not always even think rationally, even in terms of their own interests. Yes, the interest is to obliterate, to flatten Gaza, to kill each and every Palestinian living in Gaza. But the blocking out of communication, they see it as part of that, but they do not understand that this is simply backfiring. It's making the Israeli regime yet again look like a regime that wants to close out each and every communication.
Meanwhile, Israel continues to target hospitals in Gaza, destroying a few healthcare facilities that are still open. The Palestinian Red Cross said regimes attacked Al Amal Hospital in the southern city of Khan Yunis with drones, adding displaced people were injured as a result of drones targeting citizens there with gunfire. The World Health Organization says most of the coastal sliver's 36 hospitals have stopped working. The organization says Israel's attacked hospitals and other vital medical infrastructure nearly 600 times. Israeli forces have carried out fresh raids in several areas of the occupied West Bank, including a refugee camp near Al-Quds. Regime troops clashed with Palestinians during a raid on the Shufat camp. They abducted several Palestinians as well. There's another Israeli raid on the Balata refugee camp near Nablus. The military wing of Islamic Jihad resistance movement says its fighters from Nablus confronted Israeli forces at the camp. Another Palestinian armed faction named Al-Aqsa Marchers Brigades also reported confrontation with regime troops there. Since October 7th, Israel's intensified its raids and arrests throughout much of the occupied territory. Regime forces withdrew from refugee camp in the city of Tukaram on Friday after raiding several locations there for almost 2 days. Raid killing at least 8 Palestinians and left a trail of destruction.
The Israeli army comes to kill, not to detain or arrest wanted people. No, they come to kill young people, old people, animals or inanimates. If they see a shadow of a cat, they'll kill it.
At the beginning of the raid, they entered this house and they stayed in it. There was a window there and they were observing through it. More soldiers joined them and they raided the area and destroyed houses.
Dozens of Palestinians have been abducted during a 2-day raid onto a Tukaram refugee camp. According to an advocacy group, Palestinian Prisoners Club, some of those detained were severely beaten by Israeli forces. Since October 7th, Israel's military and settlers have carried out incursions into different areas of the West Bank almost on a daily basis, killing and arresting Palestinians during these raids. Israel and Hezbollah resistance movement continue to exchange fire along the southern Lebanese border. In the latest clashes, Israeli occupation forces have conducted new strikes in several southern Lebanese towns, and in response, Hezbollah has fired a barrage of missiles at Upper Galilee in northern occupied territories. Israeli media says drone was also launched from Lebanon and reached Haifa Bay. Two sides have been engaged in intense fighting since Israel launched its genocidal war on Gaza in early October. The Lebanese movement says attacks on Israel will stop once the regime ends its onslaught against Palestinians. And Mariam Saleh joined us earlier with more details about latest developments along the southern Lebanese border.
That the resistance has declared in a statement that they targeted a movement of Israeli soldiers between two of the Israeli posts in the occupied Shabah farms. It's between Ramtha and Sumaka. That area, it seemed there was movement for soldiers. Hezbollah said they attacked them with the use of a Burkan rocket. They also used the Burkan rocket in Khirbet Ma'ar. This is another post for the Israelis, but not in occupied Lebanese territory. It's in occupied Palestinian territory. And they also used Burkan in that instance as well. It seems Hezbollah has been using the Burkan rocket more often in the latest round of confrontations. But we also have other operations where they conducted also other resistance operations in certain areas. We do know from the Israeli media that they have shot down, as they say, a drone which flew from Lebanese territory. Hezbollah has not denied or claimed any responsibility on that, but they said that it was flying close to an area which was in Haifa. It could have been a Hezbollah. It could have been from Hezbollah towards a strategic area in Haifa. Could have also been something from the Iraqi resistance, since we know that they are quite active in that arena as well. We know that there was an explosion recently and near the oil refineries in Haifa.
Thanks for tuning in, and bye-bye for now.
A diverse range of programs. Spirituality. Youth. Eastern Tales. Roundtable discussions. Culture. Politics. All produced by IRIB English Radio.
The United States has provided unconditional support for the Zionist regime's military offensive in Gaza and has blocked efforts towards a ceasefire, which agencies say is urgently needed to deliver enough aid to stave off a humanitarian catastrophe. Regarding this issue, we have taken a look at world media websites and news agencies for further details. Stay tuned for more. The Electronic Intifada wrote, "For the fourth consecutive day on Tuesday, January 17th, Gaza was experiencing its seventh and longest telecommunications blackout in 3 months after two workers on a mission to repair damaged lines were killed in Khan Yunis recently. According to the UN Office for the Coordination of Humanitarian Affairs, the blackout of telecommunications deprives people in Gaza from accessing life-saving information, preventing people from calling for first responders, and impedes other forms of humanitarian response." The Palestinian Health Ministry in Gaza reported that some 260 Palestinians were killed between the afternoons of 12th and 14th of January. Nearly 24,000 people have been killed in Gaza since October 7th, almost half of them children. Recently, 20 people were killed on a strike on a home in the Sabra neighborhood of Gaza City. Six people were reported killed in a strike on a home in Zaytun neighborhood east of Gaza City that same day, and four were killed in a strike in Al Boraji refugee camp in central Gaza. Another 12 people were killed when a house was hit in southern Gaza, OCHA said. Three Palestinian human rights groups, including Al-Haq, Al-Mizan and the Palestinian Center for Human Rights, said that the Israeli military is killing an average of 250 Palestinians per day in Gaza, a higher daily death rate than any other 21st century armed conflict. Thousands more people remain buried under rubble, whether dead or alive, some enduring this situation for days or even weeks, the rights groups added. The group said hundreds of bodies are in a state of decay, deprived of the right to a dignified burial, as Israel continues to deny medical and rescue teams access to areas where its troops and soldiers are deployed. More than 60,300 Palestinians in Gaza have been wounded since October 7th. Save the Children said that around 1,000 children in Gaza have lost one or both of their legs, many having them amputated without anesthetic, and will require a lifetime of medical care. One in every 100 people in Gaza have been killed and entire neighborhoods have been destroyed. The Palestinian Health Ministry says that 4% of Gaza's population has been killed, wounded, or is missing under the rubble of destroyed buildings. Those killed include 117 journalists and media workers, 337 medics, 45 members of the Palestinian Civil Defense, and nearly 150 UN employees. Nearly 85% of Gaza's population of 2.3 million have been forced to leave their homes and are displaced within the territory. Recently, Martin Griffiths, the UN humanitarian relief chief, said that he was deeply alarmed by recent statements by Israeli ministers regarding plans to encourage the mass transfer of civilians from Gaza to third countries, currently being referred to as voluntary relocation. He added that such statements raise grave concerns about the possible forcible mass transfer or deportation of the Palestinian population from the Gaza Strip, something that would be strictly prohibited under international law. Griffith said that any attempt to change the demographic composition of Gaza must be firmly rejected and urged the UN Security Council to take urgent action to bring this war to an end. The UK-based charity Medical Aid for Palestinians warned that if the current catastrophic situation in Gaza continues for another 100 days, the unprecedented number of people killed by Israel's bombardment and bullets will soon be dwarfed by those dying from hunger and disease because of Israel's siege. Humanitarian agencies are still unable to reach northern Gaza, where hundreds of thousands of people remain and haven't received aid for more than 50 days. Only 15 out of Gaza's 36 hospitals are partially functional, with three facilities, Al-Aqsa Martyrs Hospital, Nasser Medical Complex, and Gaza European Hospital, at risk of closure after the Zionist regime issued evacuation orders in adjacent areas. Nasser Medical Complex in Khan Yunis is treating 700 patients, double its normal capacity, and thousands of people are sheltering on its grounds. The vicinity of the hospital was struck, reportedly killing 8 people and injuring scores of others, according to UNOCHA. The World Health Organization delivered fuel and medical supplies to Ashifa Hospital in Gaza City on January 12. Gaza's largest referral hospital before the war, Ashifa has re-established some medical services after being besieged by the Zionist regime forces in November. Patients are undergoing avoidable amputations due to the destruction of Gaza's health system. Tedros Adhanom, the Director General of the World Health Organization, said recently that people with serious chronic conditions are dying due to the lack of care. Diseases are spreading among a population forced to crowd into ever smaller spaces with little clean water or access to sanitation. The UN Health Chief Adhanom and the directors of the World Food Programme and the UN Children's Fund UNICEF said in a joint statement that a fundamental step change in the flow of humanitarian aid into Gaza is urgently needed as famine and outbreaks of deadly disease loom. We can keep famine at bay, but only if we can deliver sufficient supplies and have safe access to everyone in need, wherever they are, said World Food Programme Director Cindy McCain, who was tapped for her position by U.S. President Joe Biden after she broke Republican ranks and supported his presidential campaign. Biden has provided unconditional support for the child killer regime of Israel and its military offensive in Gaza and has blocked efforts towards a ceasefire, which agencies say is urgently needed to deliver enough aid to stave off a humanitarian catastrophe. The heads of the UN agency said that Israeli authorization to use a working port close to the Gaza Strip and border crossing points into the north is critically needed by aid agencies. Philip Lazzarini, the director of the UN Agency for Palestine Refugees, said that the crisis in Gaza is a man-made disaster compounded by dehumanizing language and the use of food, water, and fuel as instruments of war. Jordan's foreign minister said recently that the Zionist regime was violating a UN Security Council resolution adopted in December calling for unhindered humanitarian access in all areas of Gaza.
Bring us out from Ontario, Canada.
Now back to our story.
What is it in there?
We will be talking about this.
Let me bring in Leo Sazdi. He's a professor of international.
The Spotlight.
Welcome to Spotlight. For more than 100 days, every day, hundreds of lives are being taken by Israel in the Gaza Strip. It's more than 100 days that every day, numerous massacres are being committed against Palestinians. It's more than 100 days that every day thousands of people in Gaza lose their mothers, fathers, their brothers, their sisters, and lose their children. Nearly 25,000. It may just be a number to some, but to Palestinians, they were loved ones whom they will never see again. What is this humanity cannot stop? This textbook example of genocide. We're going to try to figure that out in tonight's Spotlight. Attorney, activist, and political analyst Zakir Ahmad Mayet is joining us from Johannesburg. And also radio host and journalist at CPR News, Don DeBar, is joining us from Austining, New York.
This is The Spotlight. The Spotlight takes an in-depth look at the headlines, featuring interviews with well-known guests from diverse backgrounds to get to the bottom of the story. You can listen to The Spotlight every day on IRIB English Radio.
Gentlemen, welcome to the program. Let's start off with Mr. Ahmad Mayet in Johannesburg. Now, the overall death toll for Israel's 105 days of incessant bombing and attacks has passed 24,000. Over 62,000 people have also been injured. Schools, churches, hospitals, mosques, ambulances, they've been frequent target of the strikes, which have left only a handful of medical facilities partially operational. Gazans are literally waiting on the floor for medical staff to intervene and save them. Please share with us your perspective on the horrors that Gazans have been enduring during this genocide as the world watches on.
I think the South African perspective has been reflected by the application before the ICJ brought about by the Republic of South Africa, and I think it truly encapsulates what is happening within the Gaza Strip at the moment. This is purely a genocide. In the 84-page document that was compiled by the state, what was very clear is that this is a systematic process, a planned destruction of a portion of the Palestinian people. Everything that has been done by the Zionist entity, from the destruction of medical facilities to the denial of basic things such as food, water, power, fuel, and other sorts of items that are necessary for the basic survival of human beings and should be guaranteed in terms of the laws of armed conflict, have been stopped. And therefore, it can only be viewed as one thing, and that the Palestinian people are the target of the Zionist entity, and that it is a subject to the Zionist entity's rage. The only thing that we can draw from this is that Israel has exposed itself, the mask has fallen, and it's exposed itself as a genocidal state that practices apartheid and is a colonial outpost. And it comes as no surprise that former colonial powers have rushed to their aid to try and protect them, to allow them the carte blanche to continue their massacre. And fortunately, the axis of resistance has created an equalizer that has changed the battlefield as we see today.
Don DeBar, since the beginning of the Israeli onslaught on Gaza, the Israeli regime has sought to dismantle the resistance groups in Gaza. However, after 105 days of lethal and deadly attacks by the Israelis, the Palestinian resistance groups are fighting back strong both inside and outside of Gaza. According to the Israeli military, a total of 191 soldiers have been killed in the ground invasion of Gaza. Palestinian resistance groups, however, they're saying that the death toll is much higher, as Israel is hiding the real number of its military losses. Israeli settlements continue to be targeted as well. So that means that the Israelis have not achieved their military objectives. Even Israelis are admitting to that. So other than becoming record holders for murdering children, what have the Israelis achieved?
They've managed to alienate whatever friends they had on the ground in most parts of the world. And they've managed to completely dispel the myth of Israeli democracy and pluralism. Israel is an apartheid state. Israel is expelling and land cleansing the Palestinians from Palestine. And there is no objective observer that can deny this any longer. That's one thing that they've achieved. Another thing that they've achieved is that, in essence, they've been able to isolate the United States among the world in a way that even the incompetent morons in the White House and around President Biden have been unable to do, and as previous morons like George Bush were unable to do. There are now not only the Cuba sanctions, where the U.S. is, you know, one of two or three voices against the entire global community at the General Assembly, but there are resolutions, including genocidal resolutions, where the U.S. stands with Israel, Ukraine, and maybe Palau or Marshall Islands, depending on what day it is. That is also an achievement of Israel. That's a remarkable achievement, to tell the truth. The United States, the most powerful military on the planet, so at least by dollars spent, and with one of the largest economies, if not the largest, depending on your measurement, stands alone in front of the world as siding with genocide, and unabashedly.
Mr. Ahmad Mayet, the recent Israeli raids, mostly in the south of Gaza, which was supposed to be a safe zone, were conducted under the cover of a near-total communications blackout. Now, a UN rights expert has also said that what Israel is doing in Gaza is a violation of international law and is highly illegal. Why is the regime imposing a communications blackout?
I think there are three objectives. The first objective is the most obvious one, and that is to blind the international world's eyes. Hoping that their massacres would not be documented, the massacres would not be reported, and it would not be live streamed. One of the defining characteristics of this particular war is that the massacres, the attacks, have been documented. It becomes impossible for Israel to distance itself from the large-scale force and disproportionate force being utilized against the civilian population, and can only be determined that this is a means of terrorizing the population. The second reason is to hamstring aid capabilities, and this has been documented by the United Nations, by numerous aid agencies, that it becomes impossible to coordinate delivery of aid and other important functions such as medical extractions, etc., or to dispatch civilian defense crews to rescue people from bombed buildings if there's no communication. The final aspect, and this is a feeble attempt by the Israeli regime to try and hamstring the resistance capabilities in the hope that because there would be some sort of digital blackout, whether it's electronic warfare or destruction of infrastructure, telecommunications infrastructure, they would be able to disrupt the capabilities of the resistance to conduct the operations. What has been demonstrated is that the resistance works in 2 to 3 man crews. They continue autonomously, and they have been incredibly successful on the ground. And Israel's plans to, in all three phases, or rather all three spheres, have failed. The world knows what they are doing. The Gazan people remain resilient despite their suffering, and the resistance is destroying the Zionist entity on a daily basis. It's a complete loss for Israel despite their draconian tactics.
Don DeBar, Mexico and Chile have referred Israel's war on Gaza to the ICC, that's the International Criminal Court. Last week, South Africa also presented a case at the ICJ, the International Court of Justice, over the Gaza war. That case said Israel is committing genocide in Gaza. What kind of outcome are you expecting from these international tribunals? In addition to that, Benjamin Netanyahu, in a defiant message, recently said that, quote, nobody can stop us, not The Hague and not anybody else. That sounds just like what a bloodthirsty war criminal would say, doesn't it?
Yeah, it's exactly what a bloodthirsty war criminal did say, as a matter of fact. His name is George W. Bush. When there were grumblings at in the public sphere about going to the ICC, about U.S. behavior in Afghanistan and Iraq, He said, in essence, that if any of our, and they passed legislation, certainly an executive order, I don't remember if it made it through the Congress, but there was law made or declared that if any enforcement arm of the ICC attempted to meddle with any American military personnel, that the United States would defend them, including, they call it, I forget, the Bomb the Hague Act or something, some very aggressive language, including military options against the ICC. So, this is exactly what a bloodthirsty war criminal would say, because that's what a bloodthirsty war criminal did say. But between the two, you have the ICJ, the International Court of Justice, which is a direct construct, is part of the UN Charter, which is charged with dealing with disputes between states. That's why the parties here bringing the case, particularly South Africa, it's a nation state. And so they have they have standing to do this. The ICC, they're looking at criminal activity not by states, although that can be that, but by individuals. So we're looking at cases that are being brought against Israel, and I haven't seen the cases yet at the ICC that is filed yesterday, but I assume Netanyahu and other officials are going to be named. Now, what happens? At the moment at the ICJ, they're seeking injunctive relief. In other words, we'll settle the case later as we can litigate it, but right now we want you to stop them from blowing up Gaza. And that is what's before the court. If South Africa prevails, a judgment comes out of the ICJ. Then the question of that is, okay, we have to go to the Security Council to get authority to have military action taken to enforce this if Israel refuses to do it, like Netanyahu says he will. Well, the U.S. vetoes it, or they have Britain or France veto it at the Security Council. It's a dead end there. If anyone were to actually militarily intervene after that, they would be in violation of the UN Charter. And realistically speaking, if the U.S. is standing with Israel now, whoever is going to challenge that, no matter what comes out of these courts, is taking on a war with the United States. And they're making it clear while they're bombing Yemen, saying this has nothing to do with Israel in the midst of this genocide.
Mr. Ahmad Mayet, how important has the unified response been from the resistance in the region in retaliation for the war on Gaza? There's Lebanon's Hezbollah, Yemen's Ansar, the resistance movement, and the armed forces of the country, resistance groups in Syria and Iraq. Were the Israelis in Washington not considering the repercussions of a coordinated and unified response from all resistance fronts in the region?
I think they did. I think they did take this into consideration and part of the calculus, because the United States was compelled to send two aircraft carrier battle groups to the region to try and threaten the resistance axis into sitting on the sidelines and watching their brethren being slaughtered in Gaza. This did not go according to plan. It was impossible for the United States to exercise any form of deterrence. And what we are seeing now is a complete changing of the table. Ansar Allah in Yemen have imposed a naval blockade on all ships heading towards the Zionist port of Eilat. They have targeted U.S. ships as well, despite the heavy presence of U.S. Warships within the region and within striking distance of Yemen. They have shown fearlessness. On the northern front, Hezbollah has achieved its goal. It was twofold. One was to draw some of the best Israeli forces up towards the north and keep them occupied there in a war not only of attrition, but also keep them in a state of uncertainty. Therefore, it would be impossible for them to relieve the pressure on the north and go and assist the slaughter in Gaza. Therefore, it kept the Israeli military force particularly depleted in the Gaza Strip. The second part was to impose an economic suffering on the Zionist entity by forcing approximately, the figures are fluctuating, but between 90 to 100,000 settlers in the north had to be evacuated out of the reach of Hezbollah armaments. So when you look at these two factors combining, Hezbollah has achieved its goals. We have now a new indication that is coming out from the eastern side, and that is both through Syria as well as the brothers of Hashd al-Sha'bi, that they have attacked both naval assets as well as sent ballistic missiles and cruise missiles through to places like Haifa. They've hit Eilat a few times, and this has been another dimension. If this continues to escalate, it's very clear that the resistance will continue to escalate. There have been questions about the resistance access. How are they at the moment? What is their condition? And they are in brilliant state at the moment. They continue to work in tandem with each other. And the only party that is losing on the ground today is that of the United States, Israel, and its colonial backers. And it's very clear, the evidence is written on the wall, that the resistance access has succeeded.
This is The Spotlight. The Spotlight takes an in-depth look at the headlines, featuring interviews with well-known guests from diverse backgrounds to get to the bottom of the story. You can listen to The Spotlight every day on IRIB English Radio.
Don DeBar, do you believe that the Israelis are seeking to expand their onslaught on Gaza into a wider region of conflict so they can get the U.S. More directly involved? And if so, are these actions producing the results that Tel Aviv and Washington were seeking, or are they, in the words of Hezbollah's Hassan Nasrallah, further igniting the resistance front? If you recall, Hezbollah just recently said it remains fully ready to go to war against Israel.
Well, first of all, their onslaught on Gaza has always been a wider regional conflict. They've been bombing Syria regularly for years, and they've done hits in Iran also and elsewhere. And certainly now, I mean, Netanyahu says that he's making war on Iran publicly. And, of course, we're looking at the activity that has been taking place across the border from Israel in a number of other places. The U.S. is already directly involved. They're bombing Yemen as we speak. You know that they're also providing AWACS and other support for every bombing raid that Israel takes part in. Are they producing the results that Israel and the U.S. seek? First of all, the U.S. seeks. Israel does what the U.S. seeks. Israel has its own independence of motion regionally. The strategic vision is that of the United States, because without the United States, there is no Israel. And so the U.S. Is pursuing right now what it thinks may be, especially listening to folks in Europe the last couple of days, its last chance foreign policy-wise to express the neocons' desire to take out Russia and to establish Israel as the dominant power in the Middle East. They're going for it. And we're seeing it, you know, in both battlefields, if you want to consider them separate. And so the results that they want are, you know, conquest, in essence, of Iran and of Saudi Arabia, who's been acting up a little bit lately, of Egypt, everyone falling into line and being, you know, heavily reliant on Israel as proxy for the United States. That is, of course, an existential threat to everyone else in the region, even the people in the places like Saudi Arabia, where perhaps the governments may not consider it that way. And so all it does is stoke resistance. People see that the vision that the U.S. has for their area, they've seen it expressed long enough over the past century, really. They've had it about enough, and their backs are against the wall, particularly watching what's happening to the people in Gaza. So, of course, they're going for it from the west side, and of course, the resistance is amping up to meet that challenge, and we're going to see how that plays out.
Right. Zakir Ahmed, the Yemeni army says that it's targeted an American ship in the Gulf of Aden in response to the U.S.-UK strikes on the Arab country. The Pentagon says it was the third attack by the Yemenis this week on U.S.-owned vessels in and around the Red Sea. Now, Sana had said that the retaliation for the aggression by the U.S. and the U.K. was inevitable. Tell us more about the defiant message that the Yemenis are sending to the U.S. and its allies, as they've been clear that these attacks will persist until Israel ends its crimes against Gazans.
I think there are a few things that have happened with regards to the Brothers of Ansarullah in Yemen. They've exposed the United States as supporters of genocide, and that has a specific legal implication as well. When you place it in the context of the ICJ case that South Africa has raised, there has been reports within the media that South Africa will be pursuing cases against the United States and the United Kingdom as well for supporting the genocide against the Palestinian people. So that is significant. And Ansarullah's actions have exposed the United States as supporters of the genocide, and that they are prepared to take military action to ensure that Israel's blockade, or the blockade that has been imposed on Israel, comes to an end so that it may have the latitude to continue with its massacre of the Palestinian people. The second thing that the Yemenis have demonstrated is their capabilities to challenge both the United States and Israel. There are ships from around the world. The United States, Israel's warships are there, the United Kingdom, there are French vessels as well, there are Indian vessels there, and yet they are capable of hitting targets with great degrees of accuracy, and in instances where they have not, they have sent a very clear message. So they have demonstrated the capabilities of the resistance axis. And then when we look at the third point, what has transpired is that when Yemen was hit by the United States and the United Kingdom, the response both from within Palestine as well as the resistance axis, we're talking about Lebanon, we're talking about Syria and Iraq, all have sent messages and made public statements that if the aggression continues against their brothers in Yemen, they will ramp up the attacks and it will lead to a regional explosion. At the moment, we have grades of escalation. We have a ladder of escalation that is being followed through by the resistance. What the United States is doing is that they are trying to distract the entire international community from the failures in Gaza. They are trying to quietly withdraw Israeli forces and try and impose a new regime to govern in Gaza. That is the aim. It's a distraction to move everyone away from the failure of the empire.
One last question for you, Mr. Don DeBar. The attacks on Yemen, were they even more of a revelation that the U.S. is fully supporting and fully greenlighting the Israeli massacre in Gaza?
Absolutely. And in fact, amplifying that, the statements from, if you want to call them statements, from Biden, when asked if, first of all, if this has anything to do with the war in Israel, and he denied it, and then asked if he thought that the bombings would stop the assaults or interdiction or interference or whatever with ships going to Israel, he said no, and then he said, but they're going to continue anyway. So there's no doubt, there's no other purpose that these things serve other than as an integral part of the war that Israel is conducting. They're denying it because, as your other guest pointed out, in essence, if they're coordinating military activity and one party is committing genocide, the other side is also culpable. It's, in essence, what you call in contract law, joint and several liability. They're both doing it if one is doing it and they're working together.
All right, thanks a lot, gentlemen. Zakir Ahmed-Mayet, attorney, activist, and political analyst, joining us from Johannesburg, and radio host and journalist at CPR News. Don DeBar joining us from Austin, New York. And also thanks to you for staying with us on tonight's Spotlight. It's good night for now.
This is the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran broadcasting. The voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily, round the clock, for listeners across the globe. The voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran can be heard by the internet, shortwave, FM, and satellites. Our listeners in the Indian subcontinent can listen to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran via shortwave 31 meters, 9,650 kilohertz every day from 1520 to 1620 UTC. Also, our listeners in Southern Africa can tune in to the English service of the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran via shortwave 25 meters, 11,880 kilohertz every day from 1920 to 2020 UTC. Our listeners in Tehran can also listen to our program via FM 91.5 megahertz. You can also listen to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on IranSat or BAT 5 and IntelSat 39 and via the internet. Our internet address is pasttoday.ir/en. And now you can listen to Arabi English Radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for the details. Please send your correspondence to the English program, PO Box number 19395-6767, Tehran, Islamic Republic of Iran, or email us to englishradio@irib.ir. We would be very pleased to have your comments about our audio quality and other means. Thank you.
بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم.
Questions and answers on Islamic beliefs.
لا إله إلا الله لا إله إلا الله.
Answering your doubts and questions and questions and answers on Islamic beliefs.
Allah هو ذا الرحمن
Allah
هو ذا المنان.
لا إله إلا الله.
Please send us your emails through our email, which is englishradio@irib.ir.
Bismillahir Rahmanir Rahim. Assalamu alaikum, dear listeners of IRIB English Radio, Call of Islam page. Very welcome to another episode of the program Question and Answer on Islamic Beliefs. I am Atta, the host of this program. Sheikh Agha Mohammadi is the guest speaker for today's discussion from the Islamic House of Qom. Assalamu alaikum, Sheikh. Welcome to the show.
Assalamu alaikum, bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim, alhamdulillahi rabbil alameen, wa sallallahu ala muhammadin wa alayhi tahirin. Once again, salam to you and to respected listeners.
Okay, Sheikh Ahmadi, for today's discussion, we want to talk about nafs al-lawwama. In our previous discussion, we talked about nafs al-lawwama, or the evil commanding soul. Now we want to talk about nafs al-lawwama, roughly translated as to self-critical soul. So what is exactly nafs al-lawwama?
Nafs al-lawwama is another stage of, or another level of the soul that is given to human being. So the soul which is trained, which is uprooted in a proper way, then happens to fall in the traps of shaitan.
Uh-huh.
Then it happens to make a mistake and to do something wrong, something which is against the dignity of human being. You know, I'm talking about dignity because Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala in Quran refers to this very fact that لَغَدْ كَرَّمْنَا بَنِي آدَمْ. We have given dignity to human being. There are people who do not know religion. We have seen people around the world. There are people who do not know religion. They do not know do's and don'ts of religion. But at the same time, they observe lots of the rules, akhlaqi and moral rules of religion.
Yes.
I came across personally to a philosopher who was a Catholic.
Yes.
So at the age of 25, he became atheist. At the age of 30, he got familiar with Islam and he turned to a very good Muslim.
Yes.
So I was talking to him. I asked him, those 5 years that you were atheist, did you manage to do whatever you wished? Did you practice whatever your soul demanded? Because there was no religion, there was nobody to tell you what to do and what not to do. And he said that, no, I was a very moral person.
Uh-huh.
And I asked why you had to